We have jumped ahead a little bit in our chronological order of things. We have been going through our pictures that have been giving us a sort of chronological view of the major stories of the Bible. However, we had a gap here in the middle of Lent of 3 weeks where I had to figure out what to do because we didn't have any pictures for that. So I decided to go to immediately what followed the Palm Sunday experience, because we don't often look at those things. We jump from Palm Sunday into Thursday. We don't hear what happened in the midst between those times very often. So these three stories last week, this week, and next week are from those things. So this is from Luke chapter 20. And this is when Jesus is in the last week of his life and he's teaching people at the temple. And he tells them this parable. There was a man who owned a vineyard. And he had plans to travel to a foreign country and was going to be gone a long time. And so what he did is he found some tenants. He hired them and had them work the land for him. And he left. Well, many years passed and it came time to harvest that vineyard. And so he sent one of his servants to collect on his portion. Well, the tenants decided to beat him up and throw him out of the vineyard. He left empty-handed. So the man sent another servant, a second person, and the tenants insulted him, then beat him up and threw him out of the vineyard. And then the man sent a third servant to go to the vineyard. And that man came into the vineyard to collect from the tenants, and they decided to injure him, throw him out of the vineyard, also empty-handed. Well, finally, the man said, well, what should I do about this? So he thought that maybe I'll send my son. Yeah, that's it. I'll send my son to the vineyard, and surely they will respect him, right? So he sends his beloved son to the vineyard, to these tenants, to collect on the portion. And when the tenants saw that it was the son, they said to themselves, hey, this is the heir. Let's kill him. If we kill him, then we can inherit all of this. So they drug him out of the vineyard and murdered him. Then Jesus asked everyone that was listening to this parable, he said, well, what do you suppose the landowner did? And without even waiting for a response, he said, I'll tell you what he did. He came and destroyed all the tenants and leased the land to somebody else. And everyone that was listening to Jesus said, well, how terrible that such a thing should happen. And Jesus said, well, what do you think it means in Isaiah when it says that the stone that the builders have rejected has become the cornerstone? He said, everyone that falls upon this stone will be broken to pieces, and everyone to whom this stone falls upon will be crushed. Now, when the chief priest and the scribes heard this parable, they became once again very angry because they knew that Jesus was talking about them. And so they once again began to conspire to try and kill him, but as before, they were concerned about what the people would do if they laid a hand on Jesus. A modern day version of this story goes as such. There was an owner of a company, and he was brilliant. He went to MIT and Stanford, and he was an inventor, an innovator, became an industry leader. He was looked upon with great admiration. He had many patents to his name, gained great recognition through our society, both for his innovations in clean energy and for his philanthropic activity. Then tragedy hits his family. In an accident, his wife and child were killed. As a part of dealing with this, he decides to take an extended leave of absence and goes to a foreign land, goes into a monastery in the East, India, Tibet, maybe. And the board of directors of his company elects one of their own to manage things as he's away, as president. And they do pretty well, as this president doesn't have the sort of vision and ability that the founder did. He does have a better business sense. They gain great profit. And they begin to deal in unsavory activities, and then into illegal activities, and then to downright evil things, underhanded things, all in the name of greed. They get consumed by it. The owner, while still in the foreign land, he sees his company being used as an agent of evil and oppression. He returns home to confront the president, convert the board of directors, and what do you think happens? It's not good. Cleans house. He starts again, vowing to never have that happen again. Such is our church history over the last 2,000 some years. We've had some bad tenets over the years. Not all bad, of course, but the bad news gets pressed, doesn't it? Crusades, Inquisition, the modern-day sex abuse scandals that have rocked not only the Catholic Church but other denominations. The church has been used as an extension of power. It's been used as to promote fear, nationalism, all kinds of things that have been a slippery slope. Some things that have been downright evil. But just as in this story, God, with his infinite amount of grace, it seems, an infinite amount of grace, again and again, hands the management over to us tenants, us disciples, right? Hoping that this next time there might be some fruit come from the vineyard, right? Jesus, in these stories, in this last week of life, really provokes a lot of reaction from the religious establishment, right, of the time. Jesus did indeed die for our sins, for the sins of the world existentially, but also practically, he was killed for a reason. Pretty much because he pissed off the wrong people. People in power, people with influence. Now, it's easy to attach these sort of stories, these finger-wagging stories at the establishment of the day, to kind of pass them off onto others. It's like, well, it doesn't really mean us, right? Surely not I, surely not us, right? It's been so much time has passed. Not us, Jesus, couldn't be. When I saw the Godspell rendition that was done at Colonel Crawford last week, the entire cast, when Jesus said that he would be handed over to death, had that line, that famous line, surely not I, Lord. The entire cast, not just the named cast, all 20-some people on stage, not I, Lord, not I, surely not I. Couldn't be I. We asked the same question. Could this be talking about us? No. It's talking about the Jews, right? Well, unfortunately, we pass it off to the Jews a lot in church history. Historically, that hasn't been a very good thing to do. There's been a lot of anti-Semitic things spawned because of this sort of labeling the Jews as to blame. And the Lutherans, for all that they had done good for the Protestant movement, this is where they were not good tenants. But we have not assumed that these stories are necessarily about us, but maybe, could they be? Are we the chief priest of our own times, of our own makings? Are we the wicked tenants? Surely not. How could that be, as the people ask that day? How terrible of a thing to say, as the people responded to Jesus. These stories are difficult to deal with, to look at. It's hard to look inward sometimes. It's hard to look at ourselves in the mirror. But if there's ever time to do so, isn't it during Lent that we should? We're doing spring cleaning here. We're doing spring cleaning maybe at home. Been getting rid of some things. Taking stock of what we have. What can we stand to get rid of? What should we do? What can we add to spruce up the place? So, the questions for us, two questions. What will we get rid of? Not just physically, but spiritually. Procedures, structures, maybe. Should we change anything? And number two, what will we decide to keep in our spring cleaning? Should we tear it all down, start again? Should we just pick a little at the weeds? Now, first, as I consider what these things may be, it's difficult for me because I'm a part of this as well. I'm a part of you guys. I'm a part of the congregation as well. It's hard for me to step outside and to be critical. But maybe I could begin with myself. I don't think that we are all that bad. Not sure what we need to start with, but maybe, looking at myself, maybe I'm too practical. Maybe I'm too much of a realist. Maybe I need to dream a little bit more. Maybe I need to think big. Think innovation. Number two, maybe I haven't listened as much as I can, as much as I should. Maybe I've been too sensitive to criticism. Number four, maybe I've had too much of my own agenda. Maybe I haven't listened to the grassroots ideas coming from everyone. In general, maybe looking at ourselves, we need to look forward a little bit more, not to look behind us so much. Look at what we used to do, the way things used to be, who used to be here. Think about where we will be 3 years, 5 years, 10 years even. It's hard. It's hard. We don't know. There's a lot of uncertainty. It's difficult to deal with that anxiety. Number two, maybe we shouldn't be so afraid, though. Maybe that could be an opportunity to have God carry us and to put ourselves and trust ourselves in the hands of God. This is God's church, after all. Maybe we could trust our instincts more. Maybe we could trust the whisperings of the Spirit. I don't know. Open-ended questions, right? Number three, maybe we can engage with one another better. Maybe to communicate with one another better. There are things going on here that are subtle. We're at sort of a crossroads. I made that comment at our last consistory meeting. A crossroads in our age, the ages that we have here. We're at a crossroads of where we are and the way our attitudes are about the way we do things, the way we come to church, even. Some things, maybe that's just a small thing. Maybe it's bigger. I don't know. Number four, maybe I think we could be bolder with our messaging, with our outreach, with letting people know what we are about, who we are, what we believe. With all these things, where can we look to in Scripture when we ask the question, what does God require of us? What does God want us to be doing when he sends the servant to collect on the proceeds of the vineyard? Because we are a portion of the vineyard. Well, the first thing that came to my mind was Micah 6:8. Maybe you know it. What does the Lord require of you? The prophet asks, and then he answers his own question. To do justice, to love kindness, to walk humbly with the Lord your God. Three things sound simple enough, yet has far-reaching consequences. Do justice. We do a lot of things here. I think we do a lot of great things here. I think we add to our world and our community, and we engage with our community pretty well. But if we were to take it to the next level, maybe not just doing things for people, not just doing things for people, but to really stand with people. And that takes time, that takes patience, that takes communication. Are we engaging with the people that we are helping in our breakfasts, in our community meals on Thursday nights? I hope that there are people in the community that will stay for our worship. It's a way for us to do something together with those people that come into our church that don't sit in our pews. Do we love kindness? We all like to be treated kindly. I think we do very well greeting each other with kindness and affection on Sunday mornings, yet sometimes all it takes is one comment, one person, and that is what sticks with you the rest of the day or even the rest of the week. It grieves me that there's people that hide in the bathroom on Sunday morning, that they need time away from people because things aren't as kind as perhaps we should be to each other. To walk humbly with our God. The last thing. In the end, this is not ours. All of this is not ours. All of this is not for us. Some of it is for us. Yes, we want to create a place where we feel comfortable, where we feel safe. We want to create a place of meaning that is meaningful for us. A place of fellowship where we can depend on each other and we feel like we are an extended family. But it's not just about us. It's not just for us. It is for others. It is for God. It's for God's glory. We are but passing tenants that can be replaced. God forbid. Despite how many decades we might be around, we are just temporary workers. There's a lot of names around here, a lot of family names. Yet, I think those people served for the glory of God, in God's purposes in Galleon. That means our facilities, this building, our budget, our various funds and our financial statement, all for God. What would God do with all of that? What would Jesus do looking at all that, looking at our financial statement? What would Jesus decide to do with this stuff? Something to think about. It requires our constant commitment to be reminded of this, that we are stewards in the vineyard, constant vigilance and consideration and prayerful consideration that we are indeed stewards, tenants. It's a blessed thing to be the tenants in the vineyard of God. It can be such fulfilling and meaningful work to give back, to love, to do something that will be of a positive impact for people, for our community. So as we're considering these things, what to add, what to change, if anything to change, let us remember the cornerstone. To go back to that verse that Jesus did. The cornerstone. We have a cornerstone at our church. It says 1909. Yet the true spiritual cornerstone, let us always strive to make it God. whatever meeting we attend as members of this church together, as people gathered under this roof, let us begin it, end it. Let us always be in prayer during it. Let us keep that cornerstone in mind, that we are always keep that there as a part of what we do, as a part of who we are, as a part of who we want to become. The cornerstone, which is Jesus Christ.